Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give each movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remembered it. And then we score the movie again. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good this week. How about you? Many things to share with our listeners?
I think I'm just a bad news magnet.
Oh dear. Give me an example. Yeah. How does that work?
Every time there's some bad news, it comes directly towards me, and I have to hear it or deal with it.
Right. Are you sure you're not a...
Anyway, good times.
Good times. Are you sure you're not a babe magnet?
That too.
Because that's what I've read on the internet.
No further comment.
That's what the internet says. In fact, I've seen it. It says babe magnet, Sam. It doesn't say bad news magnet.
Oh, interesting. You've just reminded me of something, actually.
Go on, let's hear it.
You know when you Google your own name to see if someone famous shares your name?
Yep.
Which I'm not going to share because that would be too obvious to give too much away. I forgot about this recently because nobody seemed to care. The famous person who shares my name passed away recently.
Really?
It just reminded me. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Kudos to that person.
More bad news.
Whoever they are. Yeah. Bad news magnet. Sam, I have a person, famous person that shares my name, and I won't give too much away, but they are a writer on The Simpsons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not me. I don't write for The Simpsons, but there you go. Anyway.
Cool.
Moving on. Would you like to hear our email of the week?
Go for it.
This is from Matt, who lives in Bedlington, which is in the north of England. And Matt from Bedlington says that he had listened to our Wallace and Gromit episode, really enjoyed it, and agreed with us entirely on the Wallace voice being seamless. You didn't see, couldn't hear the join, as it were. And he asks the following question of both of us. If there was an animation made about us, who would we want to do our voices?
Eddie Redmayne for me. I think that would be fun.
Good shout. Eddie Redmayne for you. Absolutely no pause there. You just went Eddie Redmayne.
That would be fun.
I think I would be... I'd like to choose two people.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's objectionable. So I think Ewan McGregor could do me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also think I'd quite like to be... voiced by Richard Armitage.
Okay.
Who was the guy who did Thorin Oakenshield, for those of you who don't know who he is,
yeah,
in the Hobbit movie. I think he could definitely do me.
There's a really funny joke about Frasen here.
Go on, let's hear it. He could
just the way he could do me.
I'll allow it. No, I was at work once about, I don't know, 20 years or so ago. And someone came up to me and said, "You've got a voice twin." I said, "Really?" He said, it was listening to the radio on the way in. And the current England cricket captain was being interviewed. And he said, "It sounds exactly like you." So apparently my voice twin is apparently Nasser Hussain. So there you go.
Cool.
But Richard Armitage is my pick. Or Nasser Hussain.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know for those of you who don't know who Nasser Hussain was, he was the England cricket captain about 20 years ago. I kind of gave that away in the anecdote. Anyway, Sam and I, doing our usual thing, went off and we rewatched the 2002 classic movie, Scooby-Doo, the movie. And what score did you give it?
Well, I gave it a 5 out of 10, but because of the Cardellini manoeuvre, I gave it a 6.
Yeah, I gave it a 5 out of 10, but I did also invoke the Cardellini manoeuvre, and I also gave it a 6. So, obvious question, which listeners often appreciate, is do you think your score has changed?
Do we need to explain the Cardellini rule maneuver first?
Yeah, I'll just
in case.
Okay, so if you haven't heard our podcast before, the Cardellini maneuver is very straightforward. Any movie that features Linda Cardellini automatically gets an extra point. There we go. And so
back on topic.
Back on topic. Do you think your score has changed?
Possibly. I think it's one of those ones where maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. But I think the discussion will lead it for this one. I think, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you my first question about the Scooby-Doo movie is, were you at all familiar with the Scooby-Doo cartoon?
I think those two things for me were very close together. I think I do definitely remember having... That's a weird way to phrase it. I do remember having memories of watching Scooby-Doo as a cartoon. I think it probably started around about the same time because it's always been on. It's like a timeless show.
Yeah.
So probably yes, I want to say. But not so much the classic ones, but more the sort of modern at that time ones.
It's still going strong, and it was definitely part of my childhood watching watching Scooby-Doo and things. And so, yeah, I think I sort of reflect on going to see the movie way back when. I do think, for me, there was an element of nostalgia, which presumably for you there was not.
No, not... Yeah, for me, this time around, it was like the first sort of thing, apart from maybe a couple of episodes of the cartoon. Yeah.
I quite like the fact in the movie that they played on the tropes of the cartoon, in which, you know, Fred was clearly quite fond of himself. Daphne was only interested in how she looked. Velma was the brains behind the outfit. Shaggy and Scoob were the comedy kind of comic relief things. And I think they managed that quite well in the movie. And I thought the casting was pretty good as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I'd made the note of like it wouldn't work without Matthew Lillard.
No.
But then I thought it also wouldn't work without Linda Cardellini. I think both of them just really pull the whole thing together and make it work.
But even Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar kind of understood the role that they were playing. And it was a little bit kind of meta, postmodern with the whole, you know, they stepped away from the mystery machine and all of that. And that was quite interesting. And I quite like that at the beginning where they have the classic Scooby-Doo moment and then they decide that they don't like each other and then they break up and they have to get the band back together again. So all of that was quite nice from a plot point of view and it worked pretty well with the cast. You're right to immediately reference Matthew Lillard, who was very good as Shaggy.
Yeah. Just to add on to that as well, I think it is sort of a brilliant plot line for a Scooby-Doo movie, where you sort of you have the background of all the episodes, and then all of a sudden, here's the change.
Yeah.
They're not together anymore. So I think it does work plot-wise. But yeah, I think Matthew Lillard is phenomenal in this role, which is a shame because it's his role in Scooby-Doo, but I think he's so well known for that character now, and he's kind of raised generations and he's still got fans from it and just from today anyway, so he's done quite well for himself, things considered.
Yeah, and he kind of embodied the Shaggy role as well. I mean interestingly, of course, if you go back in Scooby-Doo history, which I did a little bit but not much, it kind of is born out of the late 60s when there was this kind of hippie culture. And so he was the classic kind of stoner hippie from the 1960s, always hungry. And he kind of pulled that off really well. I mean, you could argue that it's just a very good impression. And that's true. And it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still have to be there and be recognizable in that role. So well done to him for that. And you mentioned the plot. You could pick holes in the plot until you were blue in the face. It's got about 17 different MacGuffins in it. But within the context of a Scooby-Doo story, if you can even phrase that sentence, there was nothing really wrong with it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that one. I think it had all of the sort of points of a Scooby-Doo episode or something like that, where, you know, they reveal the bad guy at the end. Here's the big mystery. This is how it works. So it took very well from the source material, but also just built upon it in its own clever little way that made sense for a film.
And there's a really good supporting cast as well. Isla Fisher is decent in the movie. Yeah. Rowan Atkinson. I mean, I kind of felt bad for Rowan Atkinson in the movie.
Yeah, me too.
Because he's obviously much, much better than the script was giving him permission to be. But I mean, I think I kind of knew this going in, and I'm sure we're going to get onto this eventually. But the script is written by James Gunn.
Yeah, yeah. Which is very interesting, to be honest.
who has gone on to do what, all of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the new Superman movie, which we're all looking forward to.
Woo-hoo.
The new Supergirl movie, which comes out the following year. I mean, as a career starter, I wouldn't necessarily have chosen this movie. Do you have any view on that?
Well, it kind of depends, because this is probably more based on his recent things, but he is a good writer and he knows what he's doing. I think there was various different versions of this script originally. Apparently it had a PG-13 rating, but I think even the melding of making it more accurate to the cartoon, like, was original. Well, what changed and happened, I think it works really well. I think he's a great writer. I think he nails humor all the time. He nails the emotion of each scene and everything that he writes. So I think it worked really well. And I kind of also think he's come a long way since Scooby-Doo. So he's improved along the way as well. But he also still has his sort of famous little things.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned the kind of PG-13. According to James Gunn, there's actually an R-rated version of this movie that he's kind of desperate to release. So I don't know if you had that lined up for trivia, right. But apparently there is a version of this movie that he would like to release where lots of things were cut out because the studio wanted to make the movie more family-friendly. So apparently there's a kiss between Sarah Michelle Gellar and Linda Cardellini somewhere in the R-rated version of the movie, because with the bit where their souls or whatever swap over, they couldn't get the souls back in the right place. And eventually they had to kiss to make it happen.
That sounds like fan fiction.
But according to James Gunn, that's true. If you look at the films, if you look at the films that he's written, all the Guardians of the Galaxy, Superman, Suicide Squad, Slither, which is actually a pretty good movie, Super, which is also a pretty good movie, which stars Rainn Wilson. I don't know if you've seen that one before.
I think I've seen bits and pieces. Yeah,
but they're all really good kind of scripts that bounce along nicely. And I think you can probably say in the defense of Scooby-Doo that the script does bounce along quite nicely.
Yeah, yeah, I'll agree with that, definitely.
Tell me what you thought about the CGI dog.
That was going to be my out-of-pocket take, is that the dog is completely real, all of the actors are CGI.
Ah, see, that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think it worked in a sort of, how do you bring this cartoon dog to life whilst also still making it a cartoon dog? So I think it hasn't aged brilliantly, but I think back in 2002 it worked really well in that sense, where it's like, you know, he's not going to be real. It's like there's ways you can do it where the dog in the cartoon talks. Maybe when they translate that to film, he doesn't talk, he's just a dog. But I think it worked, and they characterized it well enough as Scooby-Doo that you can just sort of switch off the suspension of disbelief, or switch it on, whichever one works. And that is Scooby-Doo. So, I mean, we always say it, but you can always tell the join.
Yeah.
But to me, it wasn't really something that stuck out too badly.
No.
Scrappy-Doo, on the other hand.
Well, we can get onto that. But I think I probably just about agree with you from a sort of Scooby-Doo apologetics position. You could have done or tried to attempt to do a realistic dog, but it did make sense in this movie for it to be a cartoon dog. I mean, the movie is cartoonish, and that if there had been a photo reel Great Dane dog, it probably wouldn't have worked quite so well.
No. The monster's CGI was quite bad, I will say, compared to Scooby-Doo though.
Oh yeah, it was dreadful. Yeah, I mean the CGI has not dated well in this movie. And and you know, fair enough. Do you think, I mean, when you saw this movie, you were young, okay? I never quite want to give your age away, but you were certainly either just on the cusp of starting primary school in the UK, or
30.
Or you had just started. Was there anything in this movie as a child that you remember being even remotely frightening?
Maybe when Scrappy becomes a giant homunculus, if that's the right word. Maybe that bit, but I think that's intended, really.
Did Scrappy-Doo ruin the movie?
Yeah, I think if he wasn't the sort of big reveal villain, it would have been better. I've made a note here that's maybe slightly inappropriate.
Inappropriate is good. Let's hear it.
It says, "I'd let Scrappy-Doo walk into traffic."
Yeah. Hey, Scrappy.
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, Scrappy, just cross this major highway. It's only 5 or 6 lanes. You should be okay. See, I have some background with this. And so you go back to my childhood, and in the kind of mid-1970s, I would have been watching the classic late 1960s Hanna-Barbera version of the cartoon, which was, as it were, let's call it the classic cast. And then at some point in the 1980s, they decided that we need to revamp Scooby-Doo slightly, and they added Scrappy-Doo. Yeah. And Scrappy-Doo was just, it just always ruined Scooby-Doo for me. And the fact that they even bothered to include him in this movie bothered me slightly. But then I've always had controversial views on things that ruin things. I always thought that Miss Piggy ruined the Muppets.
I think I might agree with that one, actually, to some extent.
And I could never quite put my finger on why, but I always just thought, oh, no, Miss Piggy's ruining the Muppets. I don't like it. Take her out. It's just as good without her. And I'd say this, we could invent a new maneuver, which would be called the Miss Piggy maneuver, but let's not do that.
No, okay.
The Miss Piggy maneuver is where you take something out and it would just be good without it, or would be just as good if it hadn't existed. The Scrappy-Doo big reveal, which I had forgotten, but then about halfway through the movie I thought, oh yeah, the big reveal is Scrappy-Doo, I'd kind of figured it out. But the big scary Scrappy-Doo was quite scary.
Yeah, I think there was just something about it that just sort of makes it freaky compared to the monsters, yeah.
But, right, okay, it's very difficult to be sensible and serious about this film, but, right, at the very core of Scooby-Doo is you get to the end of the movie and it's always Old Man Withers who would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for those meddling kids. It's always somebody trying to get money or fix something or improve something through illicit means. And the fact that they didn't do that in this movie, although they referenced it in that kind of opening sequence, that did bother me slightly. He was always expecting it to be Rowan Atkinson, and it wasn't, and it should have been.
Yeah. I think the real twist there was Rowan Atkinson coming out of the hole in the ground, yeah.
It's an unnecessary twist. You didn't need Scrappy-Doo to be in the machine. It would have worked just as well, if not better, if it had been either Rowan Atkinson or the Isla Fisher character.
Yeah, I'm going to have to just completely agree with that, yeah.
So there you go. So Scrappy-Doo, no. So the Scrappy-Doo maneuver is any character's inclusion, which is unnecessary, takes a point away. We've got far too many maneuvers. We're going to get bogged down in these, aren't we?
Yeah. It's just weird because even the flashback scene you could easily take out. Yeah. And like, it would be better without Scrappy full stop.
It's true. It absolutely would. Yeah.
I was maybe save him for the sequel.
Oh, yeah, there is a sequel.
The benefit of hindsight.
We'd have to get onto that. So although we've referenced James Gunn already, and we sort of referenced Guardians of the Galaxy and things, and he's coming up to do Superman, does that mean he's the first director to cross over between the Marvel Universe and the DC Universe?
Honestly, I want to say yes, but I bet there's someone out there that I've missed.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't know. I mean, Jon Favreau did Iron Man and some of Star Wars, so
yeah,
that doesn't count. That's different. But you know what I mean. Taika Waititi? No, that
no, I don't think so. Anyway, I was looking at some of his. I was looking at some of his credits. Okay, just to kind of get into, you know, if you go back into his kind of his world of writing and directing. Okay, you know, he wrote Scooby-Doo, okay, and then you kind of go through into the kind of in the recent past, as we've already referenced, but he was also the executive producer of Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, and was responsible for writing additional dialogue for those movies. He was also a second unit director on Thor the Dark World, and he also directed parts of Uncredited, but was also involved in the direction of Doctor Strange and Spider-Man Homecoming.
I wonder if any of those are specifically directed towards Guardians, though, because I think potentially Thor the Dark World.
Yeah,
but
it's possible.
I don't know.
It's possible. He also did the voice of Baby Groot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which is, I think, unquestionably his best credit of all of those things. I am definitely ready, however, for some of Sam's out-of-pocket takes on Scooby-Doo the movie.
Yes, I do have a couple of good ones. I think I found some fun ones that I liked personally. I think they're fun. So apparently Matthew Lillard, in order to get the Shaggy voice, he would scream for a very long time so that his voice went all hoarse. But it didn't really work. So instead he just began... He began to imitate the voice that he did when his voice was tired. But I think that's some crazy dedication. And can you imagine walking past his trailer and just hearing screaming? Sorry, I'm just getting into my role. I thought that was fun.
I can imagine that. You imagine just That's a very serious actor. I like that. I like the fact that you're doing this role, but you're going to take it that seriously.
Yeah. Can we get Matthew on set, please? I would, but he seems to be screaming. I don't know if I need to call some help. He's all right. Just let him do it. This is one of the few Scooby-Doo films to reveal the first names of Scooby and Shaggy. Scoobert, which I think is brilliant, and Norville.
Yeah, I picked up on that. I love that. It's Scoobert. Scoobert Doobert. And Norville. Yeah, I did pick up on that. Was it necessary? I like it, but probably not necessary, though, is it?
I thought it was perfectly necessary.
This leads me to... I actually have a question about that, because I was going to ask... Thank you for reminding me. So, Wallace and Gromit. Wallace...
Uh-oh.
What is that, first name or surname?
I saw someone having this debate the other day, and they'd come across some evidence that suggested what his surname was. I don't remember what it was now, but they were like... Then they started to get into the rabbit hole of, is this surname that I found actually his first name and his surname is Wallace? Because people call him Mr. Wallace. But I've always just thought he's just called Wallace. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I just, that popped into my head as you were saying that. Interesting. Yeah. More out of pocket takes?
This one, I don't know. I just sort of included this one because I thought it was one of those cliched interesting things. Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. both hated certain parts of their costume that I think make their characters work. Not work, but it's what makes up their character. So Daphne, that's not right. Sarah Michelle Gellar hated Daphne's purple go-go boots.
Right.
Whereas Freddie Prinze Jr. hated wearing the ascot. So I just think that that's like the one thing that those characters are quite well known for. Maybe not so much Daphne, but they just hated it. And it's kind of ironic in a way. It's like if Matthew Lillard hated eating food
or wearing a green t-shirt or whatever. Yeah, the ascots, you can't have Fred without the ascot, and it did come and go. Yeah. it did sort of happen though. I didn't realize at the time they were making this movie that they were a real life couple. I don't know if they still are, but they were an actual couple. Yeah, that would be quite but
they're both in Star Wars Rebels. I mean, one of them's a villain, and the other guy shouldn't have... That's a spoiler. I can't say that. But they're great in that show.
If you haven't
seen it. Those who may not have seen Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, I haven't, so good dodge. Well done.
Yeah. You probably never will.
There was always a running joke when I was a kid, and it was kind of a thing that we would do in school, and we would... very young, sort of referencing Scooby-Doo, and the joke was always that Fred and Daphne were always up to no good, and basically all they had to do was get rid of Velma and Shaggy in Scooby.
Yeah.
So Fred would say, right, Velma, you go over there and do that, Scooby and Shaggy, you're going to go do that, and me and Daphne will go over there and, well, you know. Because they never really did anything. They weren't ever involved in solving it. So Scooby and Shaggy would always be the ones that would out the villain, and Velma would always put it together. And Fred and Daphne kind of did nothing. But at least they referenced that in the movie.
True, yeah. Damsel in distress type thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I quite enjoyed the fact that she was able to have her moment of being brilliant at the martial arts thing. That she did.
I think that's another James Gunn clever bit of writing where, you know, he kind of adds a bit of strong female character to the sort of stereotypical character. That was terribly phrased, and I don't want to be incorrect.
But I know what you mean. I do think, because James Gunn didn't direct this movie, I do think the script is better than the execution of the final product.
Yeah.
I was very dangerously close to making a serious point there.
Oh dear. I know. About Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. So let's just move on to that, to your last bit of trivia, should we?
Yeah. So apparently, I really liked this one. I thought it was quite sweet, to be honest. Neil Fanning, who does the voice of Scooby, he was on set every day to provide the voice for Scooby and to do the sort of dialogue to interact with the cast. And it led to him and Matthew Lillard becoming quite close friends, which sort of helps with them becoming sort of friends in the movie. But like, it just sort of feels nice that he was included and they became good friends.
Oh,
so there you go.
That's nice. The guy who did the original voice of Scooby-Doo is a guy called Casey Kasem. And that will be that will be meaningless to anybody outside of a certain age. But he was very famous in the US for also being the voice of the kind of charts countdown. He's quite a famous guy. Uh-huh. He had a very famous voice. And it was only in my kind of little bits of research that I did for this movie that I found out that he was the guy that was the voice of Shaggy in the original movies. And I had no idea, cartoons rather.
Wow.
I had no idea. Yeah, interesting.
Cool.
Here's an interesting thing as well about the... I'm going to make one more James Gunn point, okay? Because I feel like if you listen back to this podcast, I would have made one too many James Gunn points. But I'm going to make one more. So the director of the movie that... of the Scooby-Doo movie that James Gunn wrote was Roger Raymond Gosnell, okay? And this is all about the arc of people's careers, okay? So James Gunn writes Scooby-Doo, goes on to be hugely successful within the cinematic world of Marvel, DC, and so on. Roger Gosnell, who directed the movie, he did Big Mama's House, the two Scooby-Doo movies... Home Alone 3 and two Smurf movies.
Oh dear.
And I'm sure he feels kind of creatively fulfilled. But I did think that's interesting. He also did Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Well, it sounds like he's happy doing what he's doing.
It's just fascinating the way in which people's careers move in different directions from a particular starting point. There was a soundtrack to this movie. I didn't get a lot out of it, but did you get anything out of it?
No, not really. I do like how they sort of included the sort of original theme every now and then as a modernized way. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, that's all I remember, to be honest.
Yeah, again, the guy who wrote the soundtrack is a fellow called David Louis Newman, and he's been scoring movies for many years. He got nominated for an Academy Award for one of his movies, Anastasia, in 1997.
Oh, wow. I like that film.
Yeah, good film.
That's a running joke in our house.
Really?
Is that I like that film too much? But I don't know where that's come from.
anyway. He continues his career of doing soundtracks for movies, but they all appear to be within a certain kind of... I don't know how you describe it. They're all kind of a certain type of movie. So after this movie, he goes on to do The Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas, The Nutty Professor 2, 102 Dalmatians, Bedazzled, Dr. Dolittle. He kind of rescues himself with Ice Age, Daddy Daycare, The Cat in the Hat. I just think that whenever you watch these movies that are just absolute fluff, referencing the movies that we've just seen, you forget there's somebody behind them. You know, you think of movie soundtracks and you automatically go to John Williams, Howard Shore, or kind of all these, you know, Hans Zimmer. And yet there are people whose job it is just to score regular Hollywood fluff movies, you know, the dreadful sequel that goes straight to video and all of that kind of thing. I have no judgment to make on people who make a living by creative things, but I just think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think that should be a shout out from us today. Shout out to the people who aren't quite as famous but still do their job pretty well.
Absolutely. So you are just a jobbing soundtrack writer and you do a really good job. It's not particularly memorable, but it scores the movie perfectly. And if you think about the world of the arts, there are tens of thousands of actors who aren't making millions for movies, but every night they go on stage, they do a magnificent job at Preston Repertoire Theatre, and fair play to them for that, because we aren't doing it, right?
Exactly.
So fair.
Yeah,
so
true.
So we are not criticising these people. We're saying fair play for doing your job and making a living out of doing something that you enjoy. That could be a good review for this movie.
It could be. To be fair, that is true, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else we need to say about this movie? I'm sure you've got other things you want to say.
My favourite bit in this film was when the monster destroyed the window that controlled the dramatic lighting. It just jumps through the window and all of a sudden it's this dark light because everything's scary. Yeah. Like, wow. Yeah. Of all the windows you could have chosen, pretty good there.
It's true. Do you know how many how many Academy Awards do you think this film was nominated for?
All of them.
None. No, it didn't. It wasn't nominated for any of them. It does have, however, some awards. Are you ready?
Oh, so Razzie Awards?
Well, we'll get to that. Sarah Michelle Gellar won the Teen Choice Award for Movie Actress in a Comedy.
Oh. Okay.
It was nominated for, listeners, Best Fart in a Movie.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no, sorry. It didn't just nominate. It won the Kids' Choice Award for Favourite Fart in a Movie. There were a couple of Razzies. Freddie Prinze was nominated for the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Supporting Actor.
Aww.
Can you guess who we lost to? 2002.
Oh. I don't think I know 2002. Well, here's a random guess. Was it James Franco from Spider-Man?
It's a really good guess. So, by the way, I want to go on record and say that I don't like the Golden Raspberry Awards for all the reasons that we've just outlined. People are making a living, they do their job, and I think but as long as they're done in a good spirit and everybody's enjoying themselves, it's fine. But the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Supporting Actor in 2002 went to Hayden Christensen for Attack of the Clones.
Aww.
Which is just not
That's
fair.
That's a shame.
Because I love Hayden Christensen. I love Hayden.
All right. Okay. And apparently Ewan McGregor.
And Ewan McGregor. Oh, I'm conflicted. No, it's Richard Armitage. He's the one that can do me.
Freezing.
Anyway. So I'm out of things to say about Scooby-Doo. You?
I think the things that I've got left over, I'd quite like to use for a conclusion. So, okay. Yeah, I'm good.
So, by the way, listeners might be interested to know that somewhere on our list will be Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed.
Yay.
So we'll come back to that at some point. So let's give our scores for the movie, okay? And you scored the movie first.
I did.
And so you chose the movie, rather. So you have to go first on giving it your Benefit of Hindsight rewatch score.
Just to preface this, I do prefer the sequel. Anyway, I think you've described it pretty well, using the word fluff. I think it is one of those films where you just sit down and it's on. It's nothing special. It's nothing terrible. It's just, you know, they made it and it's watchable. And I think I like that for that reason. I think it's untapped meme potential. I know there's a lot of memes about it, but I think there could be more, and I'd like to see more. I think my main sort of point that I got from it was, you couldn't make this film today. I think there's a lot of obvious reasons why that I don't really need to go into. But that being said, I think I did enjoy it enough. The cast's great. I think the cast really save it. So I think I'm going to stick with a 6 out of 10, and that is also including the Cardellini maneuver. But then again, that would mean I was giving it a 5 out of 10. Let's not overthink it. 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. I'm going to go down. My memory of the film was fairly light. I kind of watched it and thought, okay, this is a movie I never need to watch again. I watched it for the podcast. I did not enjoy it. But it definitely isn't a classic. So I'm going to give it a 4, which is an extra point for the Cardellini maneuver. So it's basically a 3. But Linda Cardellini brings it up to a 4. So that kind of brings it in midway in our kind of aggregate score. It's kind of a 5. Total score of 10 divided by 2 equals 5. I think that's probably fair enough.
I think it's interesting that for the reasons that you lowered your score, saying that it's something you wouldn't watch again, and you still gave it the score that you did, whereas last week I'd said I would never watch Golden Compass again. I gave it a 0.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting how different we are, I'd say.
But, I mean, it would be very easy to give this movie a 0 and say that it has and say that it has no worth, but it does. It does its job perfectly well. The fact that I'm now a middle-aged man that wouldn't go and watch this movie again doesn't mean that if I was a 10-year-old kid, I would absolutely love it, find it hilarious. You know, it's got lots of good things in it for its target audience, which I am not, and therefore I'm happy to give it kind of a sort of midway mark. But I wouldn't watch it again just because it's not a movie for me, and I probably wouldn't have watched it if it hadn't been for this podcast, which is great. So that's really interesting. So we have to choose a movie for next week.
We do. It's your turn.
It's my turn. So I'm going to choose a movie that we have obviously seen together, and I think it's a film that we would have been excited to see together. I'm going to make it into a bit of a quiz. Okay, you ready for this?
Oh.
So the movie was the movie was described by the Los Angeles Times as in your face, ear splitting, unrelenting. It's easy to walk away feeling like you spent 2 hours in a mad, wild, hydraulic embrace of a car compactor. It was also voted the worst movie of the decade. Okay?
Wow.
So, okay. Can you guess what movie I'm referencing? I'll give you a clue. It's a 2009 classic movie.
Oh, that's complicated. Based on the first thing that you said, I had an idea, but then followed up by the second thing, where you said it was rated the worst movie, I didn't think it was that, but then you said 2009, and I went back to my original guess.
Go on.
So I still think I'm going to be wrong. Is it Transformers Revenge of the Fallen?
It is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Hey.
Which I'm quite excited. Nailed it. I'm quite excited to watch now. So
slightly controversially, I think I did like that film when it came out.
I like all of these things. I think it's probably fairly well known based on if you've listened to our podcast before that we really enjoyed the first Transformers movie. We gave it a good score, great special effects, really good dialogue, snappy script. Everything about that movie was brilliant. And so we would have been excited for Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. I do remember I had the idea, and I'm not just saying this because of the reviews that I've just read, that I kind of came away from the cinema feeling like I'd been shouted at for about 2 hours and probably had a bit of a headache. But like
we hadn't seen Transformers 5 at that point.
but like all of these things, I kind of have a really secret soft spot for the Transformers movies. I haven't seen the ones released in the last few years, but I have a really nice fluffy memories of these ones. So I'm going to go in quite strong on this, and even though it was described as the worst movie of the decade. I think I'm going to go in my memory of it. I thought it was great, really liked it. I'm going to go with an 8 out of 10.
Okay. Worst movie of the decade is interesting for 2009, though.
Yeah, because...
Sorry, I overlooked your score there.
but if you think about it, then, you know, between 2000 and 2010, you know, it'd be interesting to see, because that's right within our wheelhouse, right, of where we are. Big time watching movies together. Be interesting to see whether or not it really is the worst movie. I mean, this is a decade that includes Scooby-Doo.
True.
It's also, I think it's also a decade that includes the Golden Compass.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know.
Okay, maybe not then.
Yeah, so be interesting to see whether it lives up to its billing as the worst movie of the decade.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to agree. I think my score's also going to be an 8 out of 10. I think it's important to note, and I'll say it this time just in case I forget, for the next episode. I think there was a writer's strike on as well during the time of this, so it sort of caused a lot of problems. But I do remember enjoying it. I think as a sequel, it sort of had that sequel energy that you needed, where you sort of understood what it's all about. And then here's another one, which is, I want to say more of the same thing, but maybe to an exaggerated point. There are incredibly racist Transformers in it, however.
Yeah.
Even more so this time around. But yeah, I think I'm going to go with an 8 out of 10.
We'll get into this in more detail, but yeah, I do seem to remember there being, even at the time, some sort of fairly uncomfortable undertones of the movie. And I think I remember saying to you at the time, because this is kind of 2009, is that not that long ago, and I do have memories of these times. I seem to remember saying to you at the time that they had tried too hard to go big, and how do you go bigger than how do you go bigger than the first Transformers movie? So if you try too hard to go big, you're going to end up with something that's just ridiculous. But I should also say that I haven't seen this movie since 2009.
Wow. Okay. I've seen it quite recent. Not quite recent. Well, I'll rephrase that. I've seen it recently enough, I think, but not in, like, recent...
Keep trying.
I'll leave that in. That's funny.
Keep trying. Keep trying. You'll get there in the end.
Do you want me to keep trying?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I've also seen this movie.
Brilliant.
At some point.
Brilliant. So good. We'll keep all of that in. Sam has summarised his thoughts and feelings on the movie.
I'm on a writer's strike now.
On the movie, perfectly well. Yeah, you have to forgive Sam. His writers are currently undergoing some sort of strike, which is a shame for Sam because he's normally very good at this kind of thing. Okay, so
that's not true.
No, I'm very much looking forward to this movie though. I need something big and silly for the weekend. Feel free to insert your own punchline there.
Richard?
Mr. Armitage, are you out there?
Oh, I hope he doesn't listen to this.
If Richard Armitage listens to our podcast, and on balance, I'm pretty sure he doesn't. But if he does, I just want to put it out there that I think Richard Armitage is a fabulous actor with a fabulous voice, and anytime he wants to portray me in an animated version, I'm ready to listen.
Well, he's got to listen to something going over the Misty Mountains.
Do you know, right, Richard? You know Richard Armitage, right? I don't know how often you kind of go into Netflix, right? Okay, and you know, when we do go into Netflix, you're probably not watching the same thing. But Richard Armitage has simply become George actor for hire. If you're casting a British drama in which there is a crusty police officer, he's just that is now just his role. And it's such a shame because he's so good, but he is now absolutely cast as type. And I remember going back to, do you remember Robin Hood on the BBC?
I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
He was brilliant in that as a Sheriff of Nottingham. He was dark, and it's a shame.
He was Guy Gibson.
That's right. Yeah. It's a shame for, shame's not the right word because as we've already acknowledged, he's making a living. He was so good in the Hobbit movies, and because the Hobbit movies fell a little bit under the shadow of the Lord of the Rings movies,
Mordor.
the necromancer, because they kind of fell under the shadow of the original trilogy of Lord of the Rings movies, I don't think he gets anywhere near enough credit for how good he was in that film.
No.
You know, he wasn't going to win the Oscar. He wasn't Ian McKellen or Ian Holm or Elijah Wood or whatever. But he's every bit as good as any of those actors were in those movies. So, Richard, if you are listening, we love you. Stop making Harlan Coben police dramas.
Please.
It's the traditional, do you know what day it is today?
I actually don't know what day it is at this time now.
Well, obviously, I always ask the internet what day it is. The best I can offer is that it's National Grandfather Day in Poland.
Oh. Happy Grandfather Day for all you Polish grandfathers.
So if you are out there and you are in Poland and you're listening to a podcast, please do wish your grandfather a happy day. If you are indeed the grandfather, have a good day. That reminded me of an advert from my childhood. Maybe even yours.
Oh, really?
Werther's Originals. I can still remember the first sweets given to me by my grandfather. They were Werther's Originals, and I was 5. Now, I'm the grandfather. Oh, it's embarrassing.
Only a master of evil, Darth. Hang on.
Yeah, I did do a bit of Alec Guinness there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Alec Guinness would be a good me.
True.
You know who?
But he is dead.
You know, it's all a matter of perspective. I think Daniel Craig would do a good Sam.
Is that not a little bit too old, though?
But I
think I can hear it.
You're not going to see him. It's just the voice.
Good point. Fair enough.
So, you know, I reckon you, Daniel Craig, could do you. We're getting off topic now. We should end. Very much looking forward to coming back and talking about Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, whoever the Fallen were, and however they get revenge, more power to them. And there we go. So thanks very much for listening. All that remains for me is to say, Scooby-Doo, where are you? And a very good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Raggy?
There it is.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?
Raggy?